Hello, everyone. I feel like I have to repeat myself all over again because I didn't even realize that the damn record button wasn't pressed. But a quick rundown of what I was talking about is my nursing home experience. I have been in two nursing homes, and if you ask me, for a young adult, that is too many. And I've been here for 2 years, and I've had issues with them not reading menus, not getting help on time, not being able to. I feel isolated as hell because I'm not able to interact with people in the way that most people do. I've had a lot of issues with it, and the worst thing I ever had happen was the first night I was here, I woke up on TCU with a guy standing over me, didn't know what his intentions were, really creeped me out. Then the next day I had a lady say, lay there in that shit. She didn't give a damn. So the next thing I had happen was this lady named Cece pulled my leg away from my body like a wishbone, dropped at me because I didn't have body wash, forced me to let a man give me a bath, which she knew I didn't want that anyway. And she said, well, you dealt with it on TCU. No, she's wrong. I never had a man give me a bath on TCU. Changing me and giving me a bath is two different things. I realize that when it comes to getting changed, you take whoever comes in there to change you. You don't discriminate whether it's a male or a female or whatever. You just let it go. Because if you need to be changed and you need to be cleaned up, it's not good to lay there in that mess. So, that's why I accepted a man changing me. Because I realized there's no way out of it. But to get told and get a lot of backlash from somebody, I would really like to. I found out that she recently got a job at another nursing home called CC Young. And I really wish that I could get in touch with the director there, because she is no good for working in that environment. And not to mention the fact of what she's done to me. You know, and think of, she did that to me, but what has she done to other residents that nobody knows about? She was trouble on every unit she was ever on over here. So, she finally got fired. The state asked me questions about her on three different occasions. The last time, I just let loose and I started crying. I said, look, this lady does not need to be working with the public. I believe that she has violent tendencies, and I believe she's a sociopath who feels nothing for anyone. No empathy, no sympathy, no nothing. That's what I believe about her, and I think that she is a danger to other residents in nursing homes. That's why, if I can, I'm gonna get her ass blackballed from working in this profession. Have her license revoked where she cannot work anywhere in the United States as a CNA. it's just wrong. Wrong what she has done. And then she thinks that somehow she could, how dare her? She thinks that she can go to some other place and think that this isn't going to follow her, because I guarantee I'm going to make damn sure I tell the state that she went to another nursing home to get a job. She does not need to be working with the public in any way, because she doesn't have no empathy or sympathy for anyone. I think that empathy and sympathy and all that is not even in her vocabulary. So, you know, I'm very frustrated, to say the least. And then I just found out my dad is dying, which made me start crying, because I spent 2 years in this place. It's 2 years I could have had with my dad. It's 2 years I could have spent with my family. Instead, where was I? In here. Anyway, this is my rundown of my nursing home experience, and for what it's worth, you know, just because you're blind and in a nursing home don't mean that you're gonna have the experience that I did. But this was my experience, and you know, it's really sad, but I will never, ever, ever go to a nursing home again. I might go and help out at one. I might go and visit someone, but to be a resident on the other side of that equation, no. I'll be glad to see a world where nursing homes do not exist. They should have never been allowed to become such large-scale institutions, because then that's where you have problems like this. So, anyway, God bless you all, and you can email me. My email address is princesslouise77@yahoo.com. My Twitter is Kelly Armstrong. My Facebook is Kelly Louise Armstrong. My YouTube is Kelly Louise. You can check out my YouTube channel. Anyway, God bless you all and have a blessed day. Good morning, everyone. I'm here again, and I want to talk about becoming my grandmother's advocate. and how I learned, that's when my fascination with medical documentaries and medical stuff like Medscape and WebMD and Mayo Clinic and all these different studies put out by all these medical schools and universities and all these different things. And also, when my grandmother passed, I knew everything that was happening to her as it was happening. And I was the liaison between her, the medical team, home care team, all that stuff, and eventually hospice. And eventually, I Googled everything about my grandmother, and I Googled everything about myself, and I Googled everything about, anything and everything. Even had people come to me and say, well, I don't understand this, and I'd say, well, it's because you have this. And I would know right away by the symptoms and what it was they were talking about. It kind of helps to know all these things. Also, the one thing that I've had a nurse tell me is, oh, you read too much, you do this too much, blah, blah, blah. No, I don't. I want to be in the know. I like to be in the know. I like to learn all this terminology, so if I ever hear it again, I know what the hell is being said around me. That's why I would rather know than not know. It's always better to, anything you can learn, it is a wealth of information. And all the teaching material that nurses use, why hell, it's all out there on Google. how can they say it's out there but don't read it? It's out there but don't use it. It's out there but stay away from it. My God, it's not like I'm poisoning my mind by playing mindless games that have no, accomplishment. It's not like I'm doing something for the hell of it. I'm doing something to learn something. I'm not physically able to go to college. I'm not physically able to handle a course load and the stresses that come with. So I go out there and I read and I learn at my own pace about stuff like this. I want to know more, so I go and I read about it. It's better to arm yourself with things that you might want to know later on down the road, even if you don't use it today or tomorrow. It's something that might help you. Something that might help you down the road. It might actually help you save your life or someone else's life. And that's why it's best to know than not know. And, it's always better to know than to not know, is what I think. So that's why I would rather know the truth than not know it at all. If I hadn't Googled all that stuff about my grandmother, there might have very well been stuff out there that I never would have known just by dealing with her team. I was actually put down on her hospice paperwork as the primary caregiver. But in theory, it was really my mom. So when it all came down to it, this is what I did. I said, no, I'm better at, I said, look, it took three of us to do it, but we managed to do it. You know, what was an insurmountable task for one person turned into a four-person job. My dad managed her medicine. My mom and my cousin did the physical part of it, you know, which would have been giving her medicine, changing her, cleaning her up, all that stuff. And then I did the telephone part of it. Because you cannot call somebody. Like, this is what happened. My mom called them to say that my grandmother needed ostomy supplies. So, mind you, the hospice nurse is there. My mom calls them saying grandmother needs more supplies. And to be truthful with you, they flat said, can you put someone else on the phone? Because my mom was just rattling off 100 words a minute, and they could not understand what the hell was being said. So I said, Mama, I'll take care of this. You worry about doing the physical part of it. So I wound up giving them my phone number and telling them to contact me. So I called, or I would say, I got on the phone and I said, I am Isla Wayne's granddaughter, and I am listed as the primary caregiver, but I am not. I basically do the phone part of this. So, and they, I would tell them, this is what is needed. This is what my grandmother needs. So basically, I became the one who did the phone part of her care. And my mama and my cousin did the physical part of it, and my dad managed her medicine. So it was a four-person job, but we managed to do it. And then there was some stuff that I learned from Google, you know, because one day I walked in there, my grandmother caught me while I was going to the bathroom. I said, grandmother, there's no way I can come in there right now. I said, if I do, I'm gonna use the bathroom on myself. I said, I got to go use the bathroom. I said, then I will come to you. So I got up from using the bathroom and I went in there and I said, she said, can you open this for me? So I opened. I think it was several things she wanted to open. So I opened everything and got it out for her, and you know, everything like that. So my grandmother, I smelt this smell. I didn't say nothing, but I knew something wasn't right, and I said, I Googled. And this is the exact words I used. A smell that smells like a pill that has been dropped in water. And then I found out all this information about the dying process and all this stuff. And what I discovered was that when a person is dying of something like cancer, and I noticed this with my grandmother, her poop, instead of smelling like actual poop, it smelled like a lotion or a Vaseline or something. And I knew right away that was not normal. I knew right away that was not normal. So that's the next thing I Googled. And every little thing I noticed, and then it all added up. And finally I came up with something. And it was a hospice page. And it was talking about all this, all the stuff that is related to the dying process. So I learned so much, and it was hurtful to know that this was really what was happening to my grandmother. But you know, I had to know, and I'm glad I knew, so that when the time came, I knew what to tell the hospice people and the people came. There was a lady that came out, and she basically admitted my grandmother to hospice. And then there was another lady that came out and basically did the next step then. Basically her intake process or whatever it was. And she looked at my grandmother's medicine and she said, "You're on all this cancer medicine." So my grandmother didn't even know her cancer had come back. And here she was so sick. And she just itched and scratched, and she was in. I said, "Well, Dad, couldn't we give her some Benadryl?" And he said, "Kelly, I hate to tell you this, but Benadryl's not what's going to help her." He said, "She's really, what's happening to her is her organs are failing her, and the chemicals, all the toxins that are in her body from the chemo and all everything, all the medicine that she's had, all that, that's what you're smelling." He said, "You're smelling the toxins coming out of her body." Hello.
Change out your nasal cannula, okay?
I need a pain pill.
All right, I'll bring you one.
Oh, darn. I think it's hooked on my headphones. It's better than having a nose. My nose has been bleeding and it's all dry and hard. And not to mention, I think I have something swelling in my nose. There's like a, what feels like a pimple or something, or a growth on the inside of my nose. What could that be?
It could be from the long-term use.
Yeah, but what about something growing on the inside of my nose?
Oh, growing? Oh, that I'm not sure of. I'm going to have to let the doctor know about that.
You know what I know? I understand that a cannula is the only way. That a cannula is the only way of getting oxygen. I said a cannula is the only way of getting oxygen.
Yeah, I know, baby. Yeah, it is.
I don't really know what else to do. I mean, because I know I have to use oxygen. I guess it's just one of those things. Anyway, I learned so much about my dad and, you know, my grandmother's health by Googling, and I learned all the terminology, and I said, you know, when she was actually in the process, I told this one nurse, I said, you know, she is actively dying. It was really a bad thing. Adult Protective Service got involved. This lady came out and scared the hell out of me. This lady scared me so bad. I was so scared. I was shaking. Literally. I called my dad. I said, Dad, there's this lady out here at her house. And I said, I'm here by myself and she wants to see grandmother. I said, I'm not about to let this stranger in the house with me and my grandmother. I don't know what she's liable to do or what she's capable of, and I don't know who the hell she is. At that point, the only thing that was on my mind was keeping me and my grandmother safe. Safe from harm. And that lady said, can you get the dogs out of the way? I said, no, I can't. And I said, but I can come out here and talk to you about my grandmother. And I can probably tell you what you need to know. And she said no, and she basically slammed the door in my face. And she waited until my mom and dad got there. And I was never so glad when they got there, because I was so scared. And I said, Daddy, how dare that crazy lady think that she's above me, talk down to me like I'm less than human. And then that lady called back out there and said, she said grandmother's room needed to be cleaned up and all this and that. I said, when she called back out there the next time and said she needed to do a home visit, I said, lady, what is there left to investigate? My grandmother is dying. She said, well, I hope she has an easy passing. I said, you know what? In fact, don't bother me and my family anymore. You have nothing left to say. And what is anything about any of us is none of your concern. She tried to bring me into it. And she said, why aren't you in school? I said, look, I've been out of school for all these years. I'm a grown-ass woman. I don't need you telling me I need to be in school. She said, oh, sorry. I thought you were 11 or 12 years old. I said, no, you didn't. You know damn well I was an adult. I said, I had my ID card to prove it. I had my birth certificate to prove it. Look, I am an adult. And after I told her that, and she knew I wasn't gonna back down, she left me the hell alone. She left me the hell alone, and I said, your investigation is not about me, it's about my grandmother. I said, it's not none of your business what I do or how I live my life. I'm not doing nothing wrong but trying to look out for me and my grandmother and my mom and dad. I said, you're just an invader in our family. And I can't stand people like that. You know, they think that you're less human and they wouldn't treat you like you're less of a person. And that's what really hurt me. That lady, she really thought she could just bamboozle her way in our family and think that she can be, you know, like I'm less of a human than she is. And I don't like it. And those people from, oh my God, those people from the state, the first time I was in the nursing home in Box Springs, I had to deal with someone from the state. And I have to say, those people terrify me. Because this lady walked in, and right off the bat, she starts calling me another woman's name. And I said, you wait 1 minute. I said, look at that name tag on that door. That is not Miss Dye. I said, I am Kelly Armstrong, and I am a new short-term patient here. I said, what's happened here in the past, I do not know. I said, I only know what has happened now. I said, and there's nothing that's happening to me that is bad. I said, I take care of myself. I said, seriously, I'm only here for IV antibiotics and wound care. I said, and when I'm done, I'm out of this camp. And there's been several times I've had adult protective service in my life. The first of these was when I graduated high school. My grandmother called them and told them that I was incompetent. And I told them, I said, you know, or they told somebody else. They wouldn't tell me, but they told somebody else who called in, and it was my grandmother. And I flat told her, I said, don't you ever, in the rest of your life, don't you ever call Adult Protective Service on me again. Because if you do, I'm going to call them on you, and I'm going to tell them how you're living, and you're not going to like the end result. So, thankfully, you know what? She never did it again. And to be truthful, I never have liked dealing with those people. I said, There is no reason for you to. I even told them, they called, because I was at my grandmother's house. They called, and I said, I now live with my grandmother. I said, you have no reason to investigate me at all. I said, the case should be closed. I said, then the next time around, I didn't want to ride in the ambulance because I was weary of that sort of thing. And it was the day I had to go to the hospital to be put in to have my surgery on my leg. That doctor called the Adult Protective Service on me. And they said, and it's all because my mama said this one thing, "Well, Kelly, I guess you're just gonna die then." Or some shit like that. And then my grandmother, the Adult Protective Service lady came to my grandmother's house. And my grandmother told her, "You know, more than likely my daughter did say this. I know how she is. But really, there's nothing for you to worry about here. She is not being abused. And she's in a nursing home for rehab." And that lady came right down there to me. And my nerves were just shot. Absolutely just shot after dealing with that. I told that lady, I said, "Look, I don't care what this doctor thinks of me. I could give two craps less what she cares about me. But I'm not having no damn gastric bypass surgery." I said, "And you know what? I've seen the results of it. I've seen what can happen to people, and I'm not doing it." I said, "And another thing you should know, whatever they told you about me is a bald-faced lie. Because I'm not being abused. I'm not in any danger. I take care of myself. The only reason why I'm here right now is because I have to have wound care and IV antibiotics. And as soon as I can, I'm out of this camp." And that's exactly what I told that lady from Adult Protective Service. And you know what? She never came out there and messed with me again. And I thank you, God, that she left me alone. And then I went all those years without ever having to interact with any of those folks after I left the nursing home until grandmother got sick and was in her end days. And then, you know, there was a lady that came out from my grandmother's doctor's office to see when grandmother was going to come back in. And grandmother said, "I'm not able to go to the doctor anymore." So they turned her over to hospice. And, you know, they try to get my grandmother just to get Meals on Wheels and all kinds of stuff. And I said, "You know what?" I said, "Seriously, do you honestly think my grandmother barely eats a bite or two of this or a bite or two of that? Meals on Wheels ain't gonna do her any good. Besides that, my mama cooks. She doesn't like the way we eat, but my mama does try to, you know, fix her stuff that she thinks she'll eat." I said, "It's just not right to go on making assumptions." I said, "I know what's going on here." I said, "And that, you know, they were going to take everything my grandmother had." My mama said, "No, this ain't worth it." So, sadly, my grandmother died on September the 9th, 2016. And it's been a hard, painful road after she passed away. But slowly but surely, God has helped me to find peace and to think of it as that my grandmother's always gonna be with me. She's just there in a different way. And then my dad, the same thing. I already know he's a believer. when he passes away, he's just gonna go up. He's going to heaven. I know he's a believer, and I thank God for that. But, you know, I've had too many negative experiences with state people. And some of them are really down to earth and really, really nice. The ones that I've met while I've been here have been really nice. But the ones that I dealt with, a couple of the ones that I dealt with in the nursing home in Box Springs, I did not like them. I didn't like their demeanor. I didn't like how they acted or carried themselves. They just, you know, some of them seem like normal everyday people that are just like you and I. But a lot of them, I don't know, they kind of act like they're above you. And that's what I don't like. And then, you know, the next thing I know, you know, the ones that I've dealt with while I've been here have been really nice. But on the contrary, I've had one of the social workers here to act like that she's above me and my family. She threatened to call Adult Protective Service on my mom and dad if they took me out of here. And the next thing I know, I get transferred into long-term care. And the long-term care social worker, his name is Megan. And I've got a really close relationship with her. She's very, very nice and really caring. And I could tell that Tyra, she just thought she could take it on herself to say that to my mom and dad, which left a bad taste in my mouth about social workers in general. But that all changed once I met Megan. And, you know, I told Megan what she told me, and she goes, "You know what, Kelly?" She goes, "You're not under her caseload anymore." She said, "You are under my caseload. And there will be nothing that she could ever say to, do anything to you." I said, "Well, that's good to know." But, you know, still, I've got to thank God that I'm still here. And the one thing I try to do is to stay positive and to keep praying. And I pray that one day all this crap will soon be over. You know, because it's almost like they want you to believe there's no hope. They want you to believe that you can't do this or you can't do that. That's what they want you to believe. But in reality, there is hope and there's peace the same. You just have to keep praying. You just have to keep praying and don't stop believing in yourself that there's a better life or a better way. You know there is. Just thank God for what you have. And
I thank God every day for having the strength and the, you know, everyone who has a disability, they have a special ability that other people do not have. Like, for example, I'm blind. I might not be able to drive a car. I might not be able to be a pilot or anything like that, but there is definitely one thing that I can do. I can read Braille. I can do things that most other people cannot do. And I thank God for the abilities that I do have. Instead of always thinking about my inadequacies, I try to think about the good in me. Thank you. Anyway, you know, my main message is just because you might struggle don't mean that you don't have some good qualities about you. Thank God for what you have, most importantly. Because now here I am. Here I am, I've lost my dog, now my dad. He's not gone, but, you know, he might not make it out of the hospital. And then I'm stuck in this godforsaken hellhole, and I can't even see him. I mean, this is nuts. I just can't believe that I'm going through all this. While I've been in here, I've lost my aunt, which is Samantha and Amber's mama, Aunt Rhonda. I've lost her. I've lost my other aunt that lives up north, my Aunt Ann. I've lost Molly. And then now, could be my dad. No. God, please, just let my dad live long enough for me to spend some quality time that I haven't had for being in here. Please, God, let, you know what, I almost feel like nursing homes destroy families instead of bring them together. Anyway, you can follow me on Twitter at Kelly Armstrong. You can follow me on Facebook. You can friend me on Facebook. My name is Kelly Louise Armstrong. You can find me on YouTube at Kelly Louise. Thank you all for listening to my podcast, and this is another segment of the podcast that I've started working on. Thank you all for listening, and have a blessed day. Inclined person as I am, and having the intuition, call it intuition, call it ingenuity, call it what you will, but I'm so glad that in that moment I had it in me to stand up and be an advocate for my grandmother. In fact, that's the title of this one, is Why I Became an Advocate. You know, there's so much more to life than all the colors of the rainbow and all the memories that you have with somebody. But the right care that you give that person, the right way that you show that person, the right way that you repay that person in their final days, makes all the difference in the world. My grandmother She was there. Her and my grandpapa took me to damn near every doctor's appointment that I ever had in my life. They did a lot for me as a little kid. You know, going through all this stuff with my grandpapa as he aged, as he got sick, and as he eventually... My grandpapa was very much a big man, but he was never, ever, ever as big as I am. At my heaviest, I was a whopping 588 pounds. And I have never got back to that, and don't want to either. You know, the heaviest I have fluctuated, the lowest I ever got here was 475. The heaviest that I ever got here was 556. So I fluctuated between 475 and 556. I am now 515. I have an issue with my stomach, and I can't digest food the way that other people do. And that's why I have so much trouble with eating and whatnot and keeping food down. Because I'll get sick. I'll get sick and I'll be really messed up. That's honestly why I stick to what I know. If I can't pronounce what's in it, if I can't tell you what's in it, verbally tell you what's in it, I don't eat it. Because this place has a tendency to cook some weird, wacky doodle, off the wall shit. And there was a time back before Thanksgiving that I was so enraged. They gave me a plate that had potato salad on it and a piece of turkey. And that turkey was hard and leathery. It was like now and later consistency. And I couldn't stand it. I knew that's not what turkey should taste like. I couldn't stand it. So, I was pretty much like, oh no, I took pictures of it. I saved it on my phone. In fact, it is still on my phone. You know, and to be truthful with you, there's lots of many nights that in this place that I either ate cereal or I went hungry. Literally. And lately I am just flat out went hungry because I don't like a lot of the stuff that they serve here. If it's not a chicken strip and french fries, if it's not a burger plate with hamburger and french fries, if it's not if it's not a fried fish with macaroni and cheese, if it's not if it's not spaghetti or lasagna, I don't eat it. And the last time they had fish with macaroni and cheese, I asked for a double portion of macaroni and cheese, not realizing how much. And they just gave me a whole plate of macaroni. I ate like a fat rat though. But that macaroni, even with that said, still isn't as good as my mom's. My mom can really make some killer macaroni and cheese. You know, it's like I say, I'm so freaking tired of being in this place. So I can't stand it. It's about to drive me nuts. And, you know, but the main reason why I became an advocate for my grandmother was because I wanted to do what she could no longer do herself. And that was the only way I knew to help her. And that's why I did what I did. I hope to hell that this is the last Christmas. That last Christmas was the last one I ever had to spend in long-term care in a nursing home. Although last Christmas was probably the better of the two, yeah. I'm just tired of being here. that's why I'm really thankful for God giving me a chance to learn how to do a podcast, and I can create as many segments that I want to. But anyway, that's what I wanted to talk about, is why I became an advocate. I was passionate about trying to help my grandmother, and then it turned into a fascination with medical documentaries and medical blogs and stuff like Medscape and WebMD, and then I became fascinated with drug interactions, and I would Google a medication and read its side effects. I did this with all of my own medicines, all of my grandmother's medicines, and really all of her medicines especially, because I wanted to know what was going on, why was she having the side effects of that. And it's kind of crazy, but you know, that's what happens when you love someone and you really love someone. You do anything in your physical power to try to help that person. That's one thing I've learned, that love knows no bounds. The love that you have for somebody really, I love my family unconditionally. And when the Bible speaks of agape love, that, you know, in Greek mythology, or you know, whatever that is, there is all different kinds of love. Agape love is the love that you have for life in general. And when you have that kind of love, and unconditional love is the love that to me is like family. Like the love of a brother and a sister and a mother and a father. You know? And then there's the, you know, it's just, you really have to understand on a deeper level, like I have begun to understand, you know, and with my grandmother, it hit a nerve, it hit a vein. And when I kept dealing with one crap right after another, basically, I slept in the living room. So I was the only person that was in distance. See, I could get to the front door before my mom or my dad could, because they were in the back of the house. So grandmother's carer would call and say she was on the way. So I physically would have to open I would have to open the door, walk this lady named Mary back there to my grandmother,
And then I would have to constantly keep Molly from, you know, pestering her. So I was in no strength, in no shape whatsoever to keep chasing Molly all over the place. So then once that lady left, I would have to let her out, and then I'd have to shut and lock the damn door. You know, one day, I told grandmother, I said, "Grandmother, you know I love you," I said, "but you are 130 pounds, and I cannot lift on you. I'm physically unable to lift on you." I said, "I can open stuff for you. I can go to the kitchen for you. I can fix you something to eat. You know, if it's something you're wanting, like a bowl of ice cream," or usually what I bought, are I'd either buy ice cream sandwiches, I'd buy the little cups of ice cream. That's just about right, you know, for what you want, for, you know, a snack. And, or I would buy these ice cream cones. Oh, those are my weakness. Those are my favorite, and quite frankly, I ain't had one since I've been in this camp. Oh, they're such, oh my God, they're just the bomb. The ice cream cones that have chocolate and the nuts, and they're either caramel or chocolate and vanilla swirl, or they're just chocolate, or they're just vanilla. It just depends. And I like them all. I'm not gonna lie, those things are my absolute weakness. So, one day I told my grandmother, I said, "Grandmother," I was already in the bathroom, I said, "Grandmother, you're 8. I turned the light on. I'd wake her up. I said, "Grandmother, your 8's fixing to come in here, and she's fixing to clean you up. I said, is there anything I can get for you?" I said, "I'm going to the kitchen. I'm going to make myself a glass of water, and I'm going to get me, you know, something to eat myself." So I was asking you if you wanted anything to eat. And she'd say, "Yeah, I want a Coke," or, "Yeah, I want this or want that," blah, blah, blah. So I would go and not only get for myself, but for my grandmother, too. So, and then really, I was there by myself with her one day, and she was still on hospice. And it scared me so bad. I was so scared because she wanted me to move her around in her bed, which she knew damn good and well I couldn't do. I mean, it upset me because I wanted to help her, but I knew I couldn't. So I flat told Mama one time, I said, "Mama," I said, "please, whatever you do, do not leave me alone with Grandmother anymore. I said, I'm scared out of my mind." I said, "She scared the hell out of me, and she's done it for the last time." So, thereafter that, anytime that anything happened, they always made sure somebody was there with me, with her. And then they would go to the store, they'd go get us something to eat, or, you know, stuff like that. But it got pretty scary being alone with my grandmother in her ending days, because I was scared that she was going to die, you know, and I wouldn't know it. Or, you know, I was scared that something really bad was going to happen. A matter of fact, the day that my grandmother died, I was actually there, and I literally sat there and watched my grandmother give up her spirit. You guys, y'all don't know how hard that is.
And when I found out, I lost it. I lost all control. I lost it. And then there was another time during her hospice that I lost it too. I was there with my grandmother, and there was two different hospice nurses that were there. And one of them said, shut up or something like that. And I just lost it. I said, don't you dare tell me to shut up. And I just lost it. I started crying. And I said, I can't take it anymore. I can't take it anymore. I watched her fade away. I watched her health fade. I can't take it anymore. I just lost it. And I honestly, I can say this, if we'd had an apartment by ourselves still, I can't say that I would have came back over there, because it really began to hit, a nerve. It began to hit multiple nerves. You know, and I really think that Molly picked up on my sadness, and so did Cisco. Cisco was up there licking the tears off my face, and I just kept crying and crying and crying and crying until my eyes were just bloodshot red, like I'd been drinking or doing something. I mean, it was terrible. And they had a chaplain come and talk with me or something. And I said, you know what? I said, this is very hard for me. I said, I am really a shut-in. I said, and I was here with my grandmother the whole time, day in and day out. My mama would go run errands, her and my daddy. But I always stayed home with grandmother because my health is bad and I can't do a whole lot anyway. I said, I always stayed home with my grandmother. I said, we had some good times watching TV and laughing and joking and cutting up. I said, and her friend would come over, and we'd all drink coffee together and laugh and joke and cut up. I said, you know, but this is too hard. I said, I can't do this anymore. I said, I've watched her fade, her health fade, her memory fade. I was supportive of her. I went with her to nearly every cancer appointment that she had. When I was able, I went to all her doctor's appointments with her. I went to all these appointments, and I would take notes. I would write down what they said, write down what was wrong, and then I would keep notes, keep tabs on everything. I did the best I could for my grandmother. This is why I became an advocate. This is why I still feel so strongly about advocating. And I didn't stop there. I still try to advocate for my own mom and dad. And that last night, my dad was on the phone with me and my mom, and he was nearly crying. I could tell he was in so much pain. And I said to his nurse, I said, I'm his daughter. I said, he is in a lot of pain. Is there any way you can give him something so he won't be in such pain? I said, because he's in chronic pain anyway, and whatever this is just making everything worse. I said, please, can you please help my dad? And she said, I'll call the doctor and see what I can do. Lovely lady. Surely they're not all villains in that hospital, but that hospital's left a bad taste in my mouth, because this last time, they threw my dad's phone in the trash, and this is whenever he was basically
out of it. And then he woke up a couple of days later without his phone, and he said that the ambulance driver had his phone, is that they told him. And then they threw it in the trash. And they said his phone didn't work, blah, blah, blah. They threw it in the trash. It's like, what the hell? You know? This is why I'm very, very much saying that my dad needs a case and a lanyard like I have, where he can keep his phone around his neck and always know where it's at. You know, and it's really hard. I just ask God to help me now more than ever, because I need it. I've come up with more questions than answers. I come up with more dead ends than an actual lead. I've come up with more frustration than anything. And it has reached a boiling point. I'm so frustrated because I feel like, all because I can't physically be there, I feel like I'm a failure. I feel like I'm twice a failure. Three times a failure. Because I feel like I'm a failure because, for one, I missed out on the last year of Molly's life. Two, they found Molly dead in our bedroom, which means to me that I was the last person she looked for before she died, and I wasn't there, so that makes me feel like a failure. And then on top of that, now I find out that I missed not 1 year, but 2 years.